Welcome to Sci-Fi on Screen, the podcast that goes where no podcast has gone before. We here at Sci-Fi on Screen take a deep, close look at your favorite genre movies of science fiction, horror, fantasy, and comic book land. We go deep, scene by scene. We do comparisons of originals and remakes, and special shows. Just ahead, a new episode. And thanks for listening. Welcome back to another episode. This week we're going to be covering Star Wars The Force Awakens. Before I get to that, I'd like to do some feedback. I want to thank some really great feedback I got this past couple of weeks, especially on my Terminator Salvation podcast. A Reddit user named Coleman V wrote a wonderful long post with time codes and everything, like a man after my own heart or a woman after my own heart, one or the other. It's wonderful, wonderful. Just talking about different parts of the thing and, you know, different parts of the film and what he liked and what he didn't like. And I put it up on my Facebook page, and I think I also put it on the actual Sci-Fi on Screen page under the Terminator Salvation post. So check it out. It's really, really well done. And thanks, Coleman V, for that post. Also want to thank McAlk, Seth Heasley, Chris Guinard, Hedge Knight 84, and Matt Hurt for retweeting my Pitch Black podcast. Also, Reddit user Jimroid Zeus, who replied on my Reddit page for Pitch Black. This is, quote, "This is one of my favorite sci-fi films. It has something special that the rest of the Riddick series lacks in a big way," end quote. And I could not agree more. I wound up rewatching Chronicles of Riddick and Riddick after I did the Pitch Black podcast. And still, they don't come close to what the original did. So yeah, totally agree. I also want to give a shout out to a Reddit listener named Obsidian Jones. He reached out to me on Reddit to say how much he loves the show. Also was requesting Rosemary's Baby as a possible podcast in the future. Rosemary's Baby is definitely on the list. Like, it's a, you know, it's a hallowed film in the horror pantheon, so I got to cover it. So hopefully going to move it up the list and maybe get it on the next couple of months. So appreciate the request, Obsidian Jones. Okay, so I'm going to skip the background on The Force Awakens because I think if you're listening to this podcast, you've been following the developmental process of Star Wars The Force Awakens rabidly, as I was for years, as it was passed around and George sold Lucasfilm to Disney and so on and so forth. So I think most of that is kind of everyone pretty much knows the deal in terms of how this got developed. So I'm not going to beat a dead horse because I have a lot to say about this movie, and it's going to take a while to get there. Forgive my voice, I'm just getting over a cold, but I just wound up rewatching The Force Awakens because the Blu-ray came out, and so I'm hot to talk about it. So I'm going to jump right in. You know, it was great. A little bit of a side before I jump in completely. It was such a joy to go see this thing, and I remember, funny story, that I went, a friend got tickets for the Thursday night performance, and we went to a theater on the east side of Manhattan. I live in New York City. We get in, and we got there early, got our wristbands or whatever they gave us, and we got in line, and we waited. It was raining out. Nobody cared. Everyone was queued up. We got in, we got good seats, you know. The movie was delayed, you know, it was supposed to go on, and it didn't go on, and a half hour passed, and like 45 minutes passed. And it turned out that the digital download that they got from the studios was flawed. I guess this would have been the first showing of it that day, and it was corrupted. So they came in, and they basically, the guy brought two security guards with him because he was risking life and limb what he was going to say. But he told the gathered crowd that if they wanted everyone, number first of all, would get a free pass to a movie, no matter what they did. Then if people left, they didn't want to stay to wait, they would get, you know, another refund, whatever. But it was another hour and 10 minutes that it was going to take for them to download the film. So like when we actually finally got when the film started, it was like 2 hours. It was like maybe when we would have walked out of the original showing time. And the funny part is everybody stayed. Nobody went anywhere. The theater was as packed as it was. And when they told the audience that how long it was going to take, some kid in like three rows behind us started crying as his dad was there with him. He could have been like 8, 9 years old, and he was just crying his eyes out. And like, I was like, man, I'm with you, kid. You know, like I was so there, you know, like it was so exciting to be there and finally see this saga continue. And So yeah, it was a funny story. And just, you know, leading into that moment when I was watching The Crawl, you know, just episode 7 of Force Awakens, you know, Luke Skywalker has vanished, and then you get in this whole story. And just in that moment, it was like, it's the last moment where your version of the film exists, you know what I mean? Like, for whatever you think the film is going to be, at the end of that crawl, the real movie's going to start. And it's just like, it's such a wonderful moment in, I don't know, for any franchise film, really, but Star Wars specifically, because it's such our modern mythology that you're sitting there, and, you know, once the crawl ends and the camera pans down, you're just like, that moment right there, like, what is this going to be? What have they done to my franchise? You know, like, who's, what's going to happen? What has happened? So I just wanted to talk about that a little bit, because God, I felt like I was 10 years old again. It really put me in such a great space, just, you know, right, being right before the movie. And I just thought, what a powerful thing that this franchise has become, that it can do that, you know? So anyway, I wanted to share that. So we start off by seeing the planet Jakku in the screen, and immediately the planetary shots of this, of The Force Awakens, to me, are not as good as Lucas's. You know, all of the planets, when they come up, they're just they're a little hazy, a little fuzzy. And I wasn't sure what JJ was going for, you know, but they just, when you see a planet in George's universe, man, it's crisp, you know, and it's, you look at the first Star Wars when you're like in orbit around Tatooine, man, it's very crisp, and there's just something very real about it. And all the planets that they went to, even the Starkiller base, it just had this, they all look like matte paintings to me. It was the one thing that I noticed, you know, several times through the movie that I didn't love, you know. But they, of course, they have the Star Destroyer obscuring the planet, right? And JJ's taking a page from, you know, A New Hope when the Star Destroyer goes overhead. So, of course, you know, and he's going to do so many callbacks in this film. Then we get, you know, the transport ships pulling away, and you know, the wonderful moment, which we'll recognize from the trailer, of the stormtroopers on the transports and the lights going on and off. You know, really cool, very exciting opening. You know, got me really charged up. And then we cut down to Jakku, and we have Poe Dameron is with Lord Santeca, played by the wonderful Max von Sydow, who I'm a huge Max von Sydow fan. And we get the beginnings of the plot. He gives them, which we'll find out later on, is a map to Luke Skywalker. Some dialogue. Dialogue's a little flat. You know, most of the dialogue in this film, I wouldn't say most, but a lot of it is very flat in certain places. And this is one of them where, you know, she's like, she's royalty to me. She is that. You know, there's some weird, there are a couple of Poe Dameron scenes too where there's some odd dialogue flatness that just kind of strikes me. And in this early scene, definitely is one of them. As a little callback to The Force Awakens, when Poe is looking through the binoculars at the oncoming New Order troop ships that are coming in. So it's the same kind of shot that, you know, when Luke looked out at the sand people in the desert, you know, he's using the same kind of binoculars, which is kind of a cool little callback. The awesome BB-8 rolls into view. I mean, what a great design. BB-8's great, and I'll get more to talking about BB-8 as we go. So we get our opening skirmish, which is really cool. The First Order's come down, and they're blasting this village to pieces. Poe Dameron springs for his X-Wing, and, you know, I like how they pull, BB-8 is his droid, so he's pulled up directly from underneath, you know, into the rear spot behind them, which is really cool. But it's damaged, so he's got to kind of bail, and, you know, he's kind of screwed from taking off. And there's some cool shots in the opening battle. You know, we get the stormtroopers with flamethrowers, which is a new visual, which, you know, I'm always on the lookout in Star Wars for new stuff, you know, new looks or new things that new characters do. We have Poe giving the map to Luke Skywalker to BB-8, which is exact, you know, pull from Leia giving the map to R2 callback. Then we get the introduction of Finn, and it's a really, really, one thing I really like about this is that you see Poe taking pot shots at the Imperials from like the perimeter, and he kills one, and Finn rushes over, and I guess it was a fallen comrade, and as the trooper dies, his bloody hand marks Finn's helmet. And I feel like that's a really clever way, because if you're going to, as Finn is a stormtrooper, which isn't in much of the film, but you need to follow him, and all stormtroopers look alike unless they have the rank badge on their shoulder, you know? So you can't really tell trooper from trooper. So it's a really clever way to mark Finn out from the rest of the troopers. So, you know, a really neat idea. And then we get a new Imperial shuttle, right? So it's, you know, kind of similar to the old, the Imperial shuttles from, I think the first time we saw a shuttle was like Empire, but maybe Jedi. But it's, you know, just a little different, a little sleeker. So kind of cool looking shuttle, looks kind of mean. And then we get the Kylo Ren appearance, and I like Kylo Ren. I'm very critical of a bunch of this movie. I mean, there's a lot I like about it, but there's a lot I'm critical of it. So I'm gonna go kind of in and out. But a lot of people kind of hacked on Kylo Ren. They didn't like the voice. They didn't like Adam Driver. I liked all of it, actually. I like the voice. I like how just odd it is. Like it's a little creepy. You know, it's not overly menacing, but I don't know. It's just whenever something happens in a movie that is just a little off or a little like I wasn't expecting, I think I like that. So I kind of like, and I like the way Driver uses the voice prosthetic or how he was directed to use it. I just like how he pauses between sentences and his tone. Like it's just a really cool Kylo Ren mask. It's like really neat. I really liked it. We get tons of story dump here briefly. And the dialogue between Kylo Ren and Laura Santeca, again, is very flat. It's like, give me the map, or you're with so-and-so. Well, you didn't used to be with so-and-so, and it's just like, it's odd. It's not really dialogue. It's like, it's just an odd, weird thing that Laura Santeca answers him in, like, other statements, Like, it's very odd, and it's the beginning of certain passages in this film, which are just very strange, and this is one of them. We get all this download. We hear about Skywalker map. We hear about the First Order sprang from the dark side. We hear that Kylo Ren's family is sort of known to some people, which is cool. And then he kills Laura Santeca, which, for me, being a Max von Sydow fan, I was bummed, man. I was like, ugh, I love, Max. Max could have been the Ben Kenobi in this movie without a doubt. Would have been awesome, but not to be, so he's killed. And, of course, we get our first look here of the Crossguard red lightsaber, which is just really cool. Whoever came up with this thing is just a genius. It's a brilliant idea, a new lightsaber we haven't seen, just very neat. And then one of the best scenes in the whole bloody movie is Poe, when he kills Laura Santeca, Poe sees it and he takes a shot at Kylo Ren, and Ren stops the bolt in midair and it just holds it there, which is just, oh my God, it's brilliant. And it even gets better because it stays there until like the end of the scene, which is just like, you're like, man, this guy has some force power, which is problematic later when he's getting his ass kicked near the end of the movie, but he has a really neat, some new sort of force powers. Like, we've never seen anyone stop a blaster bolt before. It's pretty wild. And then there's some back and forth. Poe's captured, and there's an attempt at humor when they're looking at each other, and Poe's like, do I talk first? Do you talk first? Who talks first? That's okay. I mean, this movie is ridiculously consistently funny. I don't know if that's the best line, but it's kind of clever that they get right into it. We're introduced to Captain Phasma here, who's played by this wonderful actress, Gwendoline Christie, which we never see. So funny. But they wound up massacring the village, which is kind of, they stepped it up a little bit. So you realize it's not going to be a pure Disneyfication of Star Wars, like pretty hardcore killing Max von Sydow and then a whole group of innocent villagers right off the get-go. But then when the scene is over, Ren is walking back to his ship, the blaster bolts let go finally and it explodes. It's a really neat scene. And during that scene, we also get Finn, the character, who, when he's asked to fire on the villagers, he doesn't do it. There's a really nice moment when Finn's sort of standing by himself and Kylo Ren's walking back to his ship and he pauses briefly and looks over at him, noticing that, someone's not kind of tuned in to the mission. So kind of cool little moment. Then we get a little intro and day in the life of Rey, our main character. She's scavenging inside an old downed Star Destroyer, which is just really, really neat. This whole Rey intro scene is great because it's very quiet. They take their time. There's some really nice, relaxing music, and like they allow the scene to be set, which I kind of like. And there's a lot of great scale shots. When she emerges from the Star Destroyer, she's standing in what looks like, the mouth of a cave, and when the camera widens out, like it's the, one of the rear thrusters of the Star Destroyer, you're like, holy cow, really, really great. And, Jakku is basically Tatooine, like JJ really, and I'll say this in a couple of places, to me, this is a remake as much as it is a furthering of the story. I feel like JJ really tried to remake episode 4. So, that we have basically the Tatooine scene, and a lot of this to me is very interesting to think about, that it's kind of a remake of episode 4 as much as it is episode 7, It adheres so closely to the story, and there's so many elements of it that are the same, that it's almost like he took episode 4 as his template, and he superimposed another story over it. And, just, again, desert planet so far, and the plans in a droid, and, the bad guy entrances, and it's very similar. So, yeah, it's very interesting to track this as you go. And I also like we're back to the junky tech. You know, like the First Order tech is very slick and clean and black and white. And Jakku's like Tatooine. It's dirty, a lot of different colors, a lot of browns and tans, you know. So they keep into that aesthetic, which I like. I like Rey's routine. You know, she goes and gets the parts from the Star Destroyer, and then she sits and cleans them. There's a wonderful moment where an old woman is cleaning a similar part that she is, and she looks over at this woman as if to say, like, am I going to be doing this when I'm this woman's age? Daisy Ridley is great. I mean, and I'll get to this later on. I have a lot of problems with Rey as a character, but I think Daisy Ridley is fantastic. And she does a terrific job in this movie. And there's this little look on her face, which sort of registers that older woman cleaning the part, which is really neat. We also see, you know, some moisture evaporators as she's, you know, driving from one place to another, kind of another callback to episode 4, which is kind of fun. She sells all this stuff to a character named Unkar Plutt, which is played by Simon Pegg, I did not know. And, you know, she brings things to him and gets portions of food in return, you know, which is kind of neat. I love that she lives in sort of the rusted out old AT-AT walker that's on its side. You know, it's a very cool idea. She makes this cool bread or food stuff, whatever it is. I'm thinking like Soylent Green, you know. She just puts it in water and it like turns into a little ball. Just really, really, really cool. Really just subtle, you know, but I really like it. And we get this plot point where she rescues BB-8 from the scavenger. And BB-8's great, man. I mean, just like R2, a really triumph of design and sound. And you know what? And I said this in my Star Wars podcast, too. You know how BB-8's feeling without even knowing anything about the language. And it's amazing how much nonverbal communication goes into regular communication. Because of the sounds and the tempo of what BB-8 is of emitting, and we know kind of what it's feeling and what it wants and what it's doing, you know, which is just, it's just great. And they did a great job. It reminded me a little bit, the first time I saw it, it reminded me of like J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot. You know, when you see J.J. Abrams' movie, if it's a Bad Robot production, you see this little robot come out in the, you know, the title card for the production company. Not that they're like it all, but it just kind of, it just made me think of that. Then we get the Poe Dameron torture scene. So he's been kind of beat up by the First Order folks, but he hasn't told them where the map is. So Kylo Ren, of course, questions him. And we get our first brush with Kylo Ren's force powers. And one of them is a force power of mind, which, again, you know, harkens back to doing Jedi mind tricks on the weak-minded, right? So there's been a precedence of the force being used in this way, but it's really cool to see that he's developed this little force power and, of course, gets the information from Poe, which gives, you know, the First Order the information of what to do next and where to go. We're getting some story points, too, on Jakku. You know, when she's with BB-8 the next day, we hear about her waiting for her family. It's the first time we hear that, and that's going to be a Rey staple. And when she appears in front of Unkar Plutt that day, he wants to buy the droid. He's going to give her 60 portions, which is like, you know, probably feed her for a year. And I like that they do this. It's a good character moment where she walks up to the truck, you know, she grabs it and then she looks down at BB-8 and she takes her little portion and goes away, you know. So she's like, she's a good, you know, she's a good person in that way, which kind of tell in her character, which I like. Then of course, Plutt basically gets his henchmen to go after the droids instead. So then we get the Finn Poe off the Star Destroyer, which is a lot of fun. I really like Finn. I really like John Boyega. He's such a charming actor, man. Oh my god. And he's just funny. He's a lot of why Force Awakens is consistently funny. So, but again, the initial dialogue between Finn and Poe is weird. Like he says, are you a pilot? We need to fly us off this rock. Is this a rescue? You need a pilot. It's almost like they're not talking to each other. Like they're having their own it happens a couple times in this movie. It happened with, you know, in a previous scene as well, but it's just, I don't know, there's so many times in this movie where the dialogue just kind of really falls flat, and this is it's odd, but anyway, they're off, and it's fun, and they jump into this new TIE fighter, which is really cool looking, the new TIE fighter, like it's got, you know, a rear-facing cockpit and guns and everything, which is neat, really good looking, and then there's this whole flying battle of them escaping, which is great. I mean, really looks great. To me, all of the space stuff here is really well done. You know, like he really nailed it with the space battles. So I got to give him a lot of credit for that. They look great, especially, I think one of the best ones is actually the Falcon coming up on Jakku, but this is great too. There's also another weird dialogue bit here where they're in the TIE fighter and they're like introducing themselves to each other. What's your name? This so-and-so. Hey, Finn, I'm Poe Dameron. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you, Poe. Hey, nice to meet, you know, like it's just goofy. I don't know. Again, it's another of these weird dialogue moments where my ear is just like telling me Something's off. Something's weird about the dialogue in this film in certain parts. So again, this is just another one that struck me. I love the ventral cannons on the Star Destroyer, you know, because there's not a lot of guided missilery in the Star Wars universe. It's usually lasers, you know, so this is kind of cool. They shoot guided missiles. I like the scene where he goes to the crashed TIE fighter and it sinks in the sand. That was kind of cool. I didn't expect that. And it explodes. And if you don't know, in this moment of the film, like, the original script had Poe Dameron dying. He was supposed to die, so he should, you know, this would have been it for him as a character. And for whatever reason, I think conversations between Oscar Isaac and JJ or the writers, whatever, they decided that they were going to bring Poe back as a, you know, kind of recurring character, kind of the Wedge Antilles of this universe. You know, it's because it's weird when he comes back later. I always thought to myself, like, what was the Poe could have survived this crash, and actually would have made more sense because he could have flown them off the. Off the rock, you know, and been part of the team. But yeah, it was just so it was odd. But so that's why. I mean, he was originally slated to perish. Then we get a lot of action with Finn and Rey as they meet. There's some fun parts about don't take my hand when the First Order attacks. There's this beginning of Finn with his resistance joke. I'm a big deal with the resistance. I'm with the resistance, which I think is funny. I think it works. It's really good. There's the let go of my hand, which, you know, JJ is a big feminist. You know, like if you watch JJ's shows, like it's all about girl power, man. And this is the beginning of Rey not needing anyone's help ever, which is part of the problem I have with her character, which might just be that I'm a 48-year-old man. And, you know, that the 13 to 14-year-old girls think she's the greatest thing since sliced bread and I can go scratch, which is totally fine. But it does kind of bother me. And I'll get to what I, you know, more about Rey later. So, yeah, so there's the hand-holding, which is kind of fun. And then I love the introduction of the Falcon. I think it's so, I don't know, he must have thought of 1,000 different ways to do it, but this one was great. It really got me. Like, I had no idea, you know, like, it really, I was waiting for the Falcon, but I was in the story pretty much, and then, you know, there it is, and it's like this hunk of junk, and they have to turn around and go to it, and it's, the theater was such a, erupted in a cheer. It was a lot of fun. This flying sequence, the Falcon, you know, and the TIE fighters is unbelievable, man. It's really, you know, JJ back in the first Star Trek, which I think is a really, really good movie, opens up when you're in space with it really being like a three-dimensional thing. And I really thought to myself when I saw that movie, I'm like, wow, he started to really open up the idea that space is not, you know, a two-dimensional thing. You know, it's very three-dimensional. You can go up and down and blah, blah, blah. And this flying sequence, the way it's shot, how you follow the Falcon is exactly that. Like, you don't know where you are half the time, and it's amazing. And the Falcon looks great. The TIE fighters and the Falcon look really good. I don't know if they're CGI or models. I'd like to think they were a combination of the two because they look so good. You know, the fact that Rey, a scavenger who had never had a pot to piss in and happens to be an expert pilot, bothers me. Like, and I'll get to that later, you know, when I talk about Rey more. So, but whatever, she can fly. And they're fun together when he's shooting and she's moving the things around and he's, you know, getting stuff. And they have this really fun moment afterwards where they're like, did you see what I did? Did you see what I did? I can't believe I did that, which is very, like, exuberant. I think it was really, really fun. So when this is over, we cut to Kylo Ren and he's reacting to Finn's escape. And he has his first of two saber freakouts, and you know, he sabers up, whereas Darth Vader in the original would kill his minions at the slightest mistake. You know, Kylo Ren kind of sabers some machinery, and then at the, you know, and the guard thinks he's going to get killed. So I know this is JJ elbowing me in the ribs, like, look, you know, Vader did the killing, so I got to do something different here. You have the guard flinching, thinking he's going to die, like closing his eyes, and which is kind of funny, but it kind of, the saber freakouts really make Ren to be kind of, it introduces an element of humor that I don't think you want in your villain, you know? And I realized that Ren is an adolescent. You know, he's sort of Kylo Ren is really like Anakin kind of post dark side, you know, like when he goes over to Darth Vader. It's kind of like what's happening. It's almost like if you would have picked up after episode 3, you know, what happened to Anakin when he just turned to the dark side. It's kind of what Kylo Ren is in a weird way. So he's not, you know, Vader, when he was introduced to Vader, he's been, you know, killing everyone for 20 years as a full dark side bad guy. Like, he's just, you know, he's this imposing elder, you know, horrible figure, right? But Kylo Ren is still like a bad guy in training. He's still got pieces of the light side inside of him. And I get that, but I don't like that we don't have a real scary bad guy in this film because Snoke is like, who gives a shit about Snoke? He looks like, you know, Gollum with good PR. So the absence of a real decent bad guy in this, and I don't like that. I wish Kylo Ren would have killed the guy in a weird, screwed up way that I never saw before. You know, kind of like maybe that version of pulling legs off a spider. It's like, show me that he's got a real cruel streak in him. you know, something really, really messed up where you're like, oh man, this dude is dark, you know? But I never see that in this film, really. So, okay. Then we reached a point in the film, to me, where I think the film starts to fight itself, which is the introduction of Han Solo into this movie. So far, you know, I'm really on board with these new characters. You know, I'm on board with Kylo Ren, the First Order, great. Map to Luke Skywalker. Finn and Rey are a lot of fun. Rey's, you know, right now she's precocious, but Daisy Ridley's really selling the hell out of her. I like her. Finn is great, you know, Poe Dameron. So you've already got a group of young people that I'm really ready to get on board with, you know. And then Han Solo and Chewie enter the frame. And of course, the, you know, the 48-year-old fanboy in me is overjoyed. Like when they walked onto the Falcon, even though I saw it in the trailer like a dozen times, I was still like thrilled to death and I was cheering with the rest of them. So yes, and it's one thing that I think it's weird about JJ. Like he knows how to get me. He knows how to thrill me momentarily, but I think sometimes what he does is at the expense of the movie being a deeper thing than it was. And I think that's the case here. And I'll keep talking about that as I go. The arrival of Han and Chewie, right? And it's great. It's great to see them again. And there's some early funny jokes, you know, where they recognize each other. There's a funny joke where she's like, this is the ship that made the Kessel Run in 14 parsecs? He's like, 12 parsecs, of course, right? Us Star Wars fans, we all know that. And then, you know, he's going to dump them in a pod and eject them, and they have to tell him about the Luke Skywalker map. And of course, it sobers him up. And then he has the speech where he tells them about the Force and about all the stuff is all true. Because at this point, you know, it's like 30 years after Jedi, and Luke's been gone for so long that the Jedi are kind of a myth. Nobody really believes that they were ever real. You know, I guess the records have been destroyed or whatever. They were gone for so long during the Empire era, and then, you know, after Luke's failed attempt to create a new set of Jedi. So they're legendary, right? So it's kind of fun that they're like, that was real. But Harrison Ford, and I don't think it's a really good performance in this film. I think he's a problem in most of this movie because the way he delivers his lines is just very garrulous and flat. So when at the end of him telling us about the Force is all real, it's just flat. And just, you know, remember how you felt after Alec Guinness talked about the Force on Tatooine. It's an energy field that binds the galaxy to... I mean, I was like, whoa, man, you know. And obviously, I know about the Force, right? But this is that moment when, you know, the Force is being introduced to the characters, right? And if JJ is making a quote remake, unquote, that's what he's doing. And I just fell flat to me, and I was kind of disappointed. Then they do this whole thing where two different groups that Han has swindled. He's captured the Falcon with this big craft, right? And so they're on either side. I found it a little odd that, like, they're both bad guys, and the guy had an Irish accent, and the other guys were Asian. I was like, it's kind of a throwback to George's xenophobia of the prequel trilogy. Like, you know, the bad guys have accents. That's interesting. But anyway, but it's a flat scene, and the whole dialogue between Han and Balateek, just even Harrison Ford saying Balateek and the words Kanja Club, like he's not selling it. Like he's mouthing the words, but he's not really saying them in any way that makes me believe it, you know? So there's the whole thing with the Wrath Tars, right? They let them go. Again, Rey is like, you know, she's unbelievable. She's able to figure everything out and saves Finn from being eaten. Another thing Rey can do well. But this whole thing sets up them escaping altogether in the Falcon and leaving this monster ship that Han and Chewie were flying in behind, you know. So we're kind of back in our Star Wars moment with, you know, all of our heroes and heroines on the Falcon. Part of this, Chewie's arm is hurt, and this I don't like this at all because they want to have dialogue scenes between Rey and Han Solo in the cockpit. So they wound Chewie, so he has to stay in the back. So she gets to sit in the co-pilot and like solve a bunch of problems. Like, oh, I figured this out, and I did this. And again, it's more of Rey being, you know, able to do everything that possible, which I don't love. And I didn't like that Chewie was in the back and like she was stepping into his seat. I was like, hey, that's Chewie's seat, man. There's a great moment too in this when I think Finn's looking for a bandage for Chewie's arm, and he pulls out the remote that Luke used to practice to when him and Ben were flying on the Falcon towards Alderaan, you know, that remote with the lightsaber, and Finn looks at it briefly and then throws it away. It's a really fun little Easter egg for fans. And then we get our first shot of Starkiller Base after this, which again, I don't think the planet shots are really cool. They look a little fuzzy. They look a little kind of painterly. I don't love it. But we get our first entrance of the big baddie, Snoke. And I do like the setting. I do like that Snoke is on this huge throne in this cavernous, echoey chamber, and it's, you know, there's this weird lighting coming in that makes it look very dramatic. I love that stuff. You know, I'm a sucker for that shit. But Snoke himself looks really bad. Like, he looks really fake. really CGI. And there's just no, you know, there's no excuse for a big budget Star Wars movie to have that fake looking of villain. I was just like, it's Gollum, you know, it's Gollum with a good accent. So I was not a big fan of Snoke. I mean, the voice was great. Andy Serkis did a great voice, but it didn't look great. And, you know, the big reveal here is that Han Solo is Kylo Ren's father. And again, they kind of fumble the dialogue a little bit where he says, you know, the map is on the Millennium Falcon in the hands of your father. And then a beat later, it's the camera focuses in on Snoke and he goes, Han Solo. It's like, really, dude? Did I not get that? You know, was I going to think Finn was his father, you know, like, or Chewie was his father? So again, just another example of some kind of weird on-the-nose dialogue that I just thought was like, huh? I like Back on the Falcon. The creature game board is started up briefly by Finn by accident, which is a great callback for the fans. We get the map projected into space, you know, and there's a piece missing, which is really neat. So the map thing is cool. And we get the story elements now that Luke went out to look for the first Jedi temple, which I'm very excited about for the next film to find out more about that. Like, that interests me about, you know, what's that about and are they going to find it? So they head to this planet called Takodana, where they're going to meet Maz Kanata, which is sort of like, you know, she's kind of the Lando in a way, you know, one of Han's buddies who's going to help them out in a pinch. And so when they land, you know, Solo's talking to Rey and he's like, hey, Chewie and I are looking to hire on new people. And, you know, he makes an offer to Rey. But of course, you know, she's like, no, I've been away too long. My family's going to come back for me. And the whole Rey family thing, just to me, it's like very artificial. I don't buy it really. It's a goofy thing that I'm going to go home to wait for my family. I just like, okay, I get it. But at the same time, I'm like, so what? You know, like, it's just something about it that doesn't ring true to me, and that's all. Then we get Maz Place, and obviously, you know, this is Mos Eisley Cantina, right? Another callback to Star Wars, and it's okay. The music isn't great. I don't think you're ever going to get more memorable music than Williams did for the original Cantina scene. This is just kind of music that's unforgettable. You know, there's a lot of aliens. We've seen it 1,000 times. Nothing really new. They look good. Some of them are very CGI. Some of them are very real looking. So it's catch as catch can, you know, depending on what you're looking for. We do quickly get both sides of the equation seeing the droid, and they both kind of rat out Solo and all of them to their respective parties. So, you know, one woman calls the First Order and someone else calls the Resistance. So nice, you know, convenient plot point to bring them both to this planet. And then we cut away back to Starkiller Base, and we get a little, you know, moment, little character moment with Kylo Ren. He's talking about, you know, I felt it, you know, I still feel it, the pull to the light, you know. And I really like this. I think he's a great character because I like that what he's struggling with is this pull to the light side. You know, that's his struggle. Whereas for so, you know, watching the prequel trilogy for so long, right? It's always about struggle to the dark side is pulling. And even Luke, you know, will Luke turn to the dark side in front of the Emperor? And like the villains, this is a genius plot point. I don't know who came up with this, but that the villain's problem is the pull to the light, that the light also beckons. And to a villain, it's a real dangerous thing. And I just think that's a really genius move. I hope they do more with it than they did with it in this movie. Although they did do one amazing thing, you know, at the end, obviously. But I think it's ingenious that's part of Kylo Ren's makeup, that he's fearing it. You know, at the end of the monologue is his grandfather, and we see the wonderfully melted old helmet from Darth Vader. And in the moment when you see it, you hear a ghostly version of the breathing in the soundtrack. There's a little soundtrack cue. It's just under hearing range. Like, it's just about there and then it's gone. Like, it's very smart to put the sound together with the image to give you the ghostly impression of old Vader. So really, it was a really good moment. I liked it.
Just want to take a quick minute to let you know a couple of ways you can support Sci-Fi on Screen. One way is to use Patreon. Patreon is a crowdfunding site that works by allowing users to contribute on a show-by-show basis. All you do is choose a dollar amount you want to contribute, and every time one of my podcasts appears, you'll be debited the amount you choose. You can donate as little as $1 per show. That's $4 a month or $52 a year. No obligation, and you can cancel or adjust the rate at any time. And the best part is it keeps me honest. If there's no show, there's no charge. And it would help to defray hosting costs and for my time to put the shows together. The link is on my website, top right-hand corner, and signing up at Patreon is a snap by clicking on Become a Patron. There's also a great way as if you would like to buy the Blu-ray copies of any of the movies that I've reviewed on my podcast. Just simply go to the website, click on the movie page, and go ahead and click on the Blu-ray below the podcast, and it'll take you right to Amazon. If you purchase it, I get a few bucks from that as well. And I always appreciate it if you're on Twitter to retweet my podcast as they appear and spread the word. You have Mas Kanata now. We're back. And, you know, she's the wise old sage. She's okay as a character, I guess. I wasn't blown away by her in any way. I think the actress, whose name I will not pronounce, who was in 12 Years a Slave, was really good. But they're all sitting around the table talking. And, you know, Finn now basically is like, you know, I'm out of here. He reveals to Rey that, you know, he's not a resistance fighter and that he's, you know, the First Order is horrible and he wants to run. So he splits off and, you know, Mas comes up to him. In one moment, she takes off her goggles and does the, you know, I see the eyes of a man who wants to run. It's like, really, what a genius, you know, like he just said he wanted to run. So I don't know. It was kind of a little like fell flat to me. So then we get the Rey's moment with a lightsaber. So she's drawn into the basement by Luke's old saber, which, you know, we don't know if she's Luke's daughter or not. Actually, you know, she could be, you know, we don't know if Luke had family at all, but for whatever reason, she's drawn to the saber. And we get these wonderful flashbacks and flash forwards. You know, she flashes forward to her battle in the snow. You know, it's wonderful. We get a brief moment of Ren's betrayal, the Knights of Ren. So we see a brief moment where he's standing over this dark field and there's like dozens and dozens of bodies all around them, having just been killed by him. And we see, we don't see Luke, but we see R2 and a figure with a, you know, a metal hand, which obviously is Luke. And I think that was the moment when Luke gave R2 the last bit of the map, you know, and put him in kind of stasis or whatever. So a little history, you know, a little bit here and there, and then she's out of it, and then she has her moment where Maz comes down, and she's like, I don't want any part of this, and Maz is like, look, your family's gone. They're never coming back. You know, Rey takes it where she rejects it. She's like, I don't want any part of this, and she runs away, runs into the woods, basically. And, you know, this is our brief moment where, you know, we have a Force-sensitive. Maz is a Force-sensitive, and she's explaining to Rey about the Force. Again, it's not... It doesn't hit me really well. It's not particularly deep, but she does give, you know, Rey the clues that she'll need later on to touch the Force so she can do what she does. Fine. You know, again, it was kind of flat to me. I didn't get the sense of spiritual power that I got in the, you know, Star Wars and Empire for sure. You know, it was much lighter here. It's sort of like more of like some info she'll need later to win a fight. You know, there's nothing really spiritual about her having to let go the way Luke did. You know, I don't know. It's different. So then we get the First Order speech, like the, you know, if you know about Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will, this famous film she made about the Nazis in Germany back in the late 30s, and all the everything she filmed, actually Lucas took a lot of that for some of the scenes in original Star Wars, but this is very much Triumph of the Will. Again, he's taken from that, and it's just, it's dumb. It's just very dumb that you're going to gather the whole group out there, and he's going to make this really idiotic speech. Domhnall Gleeson as General Hux is just bad. It's just a bad character. And here's why. I mean, in the original film, the bad guys were all adults, man. They were all like, when you were sitting around the table at the Empire, right, you had, first of all, the first film was led by Peter Cushing, right? He was just like a pretty evil dude. Like, not like ridiculously evil, but like a creepy bureaucrat who was, you know, but an older gentleman. And Vader kind of, you know, was like an adult male, very imposing. And all the guys who sat around the table were like the old, you know, the Imperial advisors and the admirals. So you had this sense of like the enemy being these older authority figures. It gave the Empire, to me, serious legitimacy. Like, I'm like, man, this is a force to be reckoned with. This is like a group of old politicians sitting around, but they're evil, you know? And it like, it gave it some validity to me. Like, I believed it. But when you have young Domhnall Gleeson going around as General Hux screaming at the top of his lungs as some martinet in his 20s, who's already a general, which is kind of bullshit, like, you know, it just doesn't ring true. It doesn't, you know, like, and you don't need it. You don't need this young maniac. Like, to have someone like Snoke running the show and some maniac like General Hux out there, like, you know, he's so incompetent. Immediately, you don't sense any competence. Like, when you're hearing the guys in the Imperial, you know, the Imperial guys talking, you're like, man, these guys know what they're doing, you know? But these are really like Saturday matinee bad guy villain, General Hux. He's bad, you know? So it's really stupid, and it makes the First Order kind of like a... I don't really take them seriously as any kind of bad force, as I did the Empire, you know? So it's kind of my take on that.
So now we get, there's this attack Maz Kanata's place by the First Order. So they attack for a while first before the Resistance get there. And I don't know, it was really weird to me to have Finn wielding a lightsaber, you know, like, I don't know why it bothered me, but it just did. That he's like, I don't have a weapon, and Maz Kanata's like, you're holding one in your hand, you know. And so he's out there battling stormtroopers with a lightsaber. And, you know, just happens to kind of bump into an old crony of his who labels him a traitor. I did like the device that the First Order had come up with to battle lightsabers, which, first of all, if there are no Jedi and there's no lightsabers, like, why are they coming up with this thing? Why is this an anti-lightsaber weapon being deployed when there are no more lightsabers? You know, don't get me started. But anyway, it's cool. It's a cool weapon and how it flips around and, you know, the saber can't cut through it, so, you know, they're actually fighting. And it's okay. You know, I don't love Finn having the saber. Like, it's in a way, you know, Luke had it as an apprentice, but he never used it until he was trained. And, you know, Ben had it and used it because he was a master. No one ever really used a saber in any of the two trilogies unless they were like a Jedi. So to have Finn just kind of pick it up and use it, and even, you know, later when he uses it, I don't know, it always bugged me. I wasn't a fan of that. There's some funny moments with Han and Chewie, you know. I mean, they're kind of out of place and make the battle half a joke, half real, you know, where Han's shooting people without looking at them, and he tries Chewie's bowcaster, and he's like, I like this. And I'm laughing. It's funny, you know, but it lightens up the proceedings a bit. And then I love the arrival of the Resistance is terrific. You know, the X-Wing is coming along so close to the surface of that lake where it's kicking up mist. Really wonderful. And the fighting is great. And there's this one great scene where Finn is watching. He thinks Poe is dead, so he's just watching a pilot. And we follow this X-Wing as it does, like, a bunch of things. And it destroys a bunch of X-Wings, like, without cutting away. And at the end of it, you know, Finn jumps up and down like, that's one hell of a pilot. And it's a great shot. Like, I've never seen, you know, a ship-to-ship battle like that where you follow one ship from that far away and watch it do all the stuff. So I love that. So then you get a brief confrontation between Rey and Kylo Ren in the woods. You know, he stops her cold with the Force, you know, like, he just, like, freezes her. And we get a real close-up of his saber as he puts it very close to her neck, which he's frozen. And we see how unfinished it is and how, like, unstable it is. And obviously, that's who he is as a character. You know, unfinished and unstable. He's kind of like a, you know, a young man who wants to be, he wants to be Darth Vader. He wants to be as strong, and as Rey will intuit later on, because she can do everything, that he's afraid that he's not going to be as strong because of this pull to the light side. So I love the saber, and I love the unfinished, you know, wildness of it. And again, Ren has total control here, man. Like, he stops her in his tracks. She can't move. And then at one point when they want to take her, he kind of moves his hand over her head and she passes out. So he's able to knock her out. So he, you know, up until this moment in the film, he's just demonstrated complete mastery over the Force. Like, he's just, you know, stopping blaster bolts and freezing people. And, you know, he's able to pull information from people's minds and knock them out. Like, it's amazing. The guy's very powerful. And it's very cool. And then after this, we have the Leia Han reunion. And I don't like it at all, man. It's flat. There's something wrong with Carrie Fisher. I don't know what it is, but her delivery is, there's something about how her mouth, she holds her mouth and the way she delivers her lines, it's very, very, it's like she's struggling to get them out. Whatever, it doesn't even matter because the dialogue between the two of them is so flat. It's such an anticlimactic reunion, you know, like they just seem like these two people talking at each other. There's no chemistry between them anymore, and it's a sham, you know. So, and even with the fun 3PO moment of getting in between, as he did in Empire, right, when they were kissing, and so I fixed the hyperdrive, you know, like, I get it, but even with that, it's just kind of a flat moment, and it was kind of disappointing. Even though I'm hearing their sort of their love theme from the earlier trilogy is there, which is great, but it's just, yeah, the magic is gone between these two, which is too bad. So then we're back at the Rebel base, and we get this story about R2 being dormant for years after Master Luke left, you know, and he's just, you know, 3PO's there and R2's there, but he's frozen. Obviously, you know, it'd be tough to have BB-8 and R2 in the same movie because they're kind of the same character in weird ways. So they kind of, you know, R2 unfortunately is saved till last, but hey, what are you going to do? So then we get the Rey-Kylo Ren confrontation back on Starkiller Base, and I like that he takes his helmet off. You know, I think it's really cool that he takes it off. And I really like Adam Driver here, man. He's so good, you know. He's just, and I haven't seen a lot of girls. I know a lot of people are like, or some people that have said, that I've read about, like, oh, every time I see him on screen, I think it's the guy from Girls. And, like, you know, I've only seen a couple episodes of Girls, so I don't know him from that. So I really liked him in this, and I liked how he was here. He was very, very intense and very good, but he would have made a terrific Anakin Skywalker, man. Probably a little too creepy for Anakin, but he's really good. Then they have the mind battle, and of course, you know, because she can do everything, you know, she retaliates with the Force, and but I do like, I get so conflicted over this stuff. I don't buy some of it, and yet I like what they're doing. I like the fact that he learns a little bit about her, where, you know, the years alone she's lived with no one around on the planet. And then, you know, she flows back into him in some ways saying, you're afraid that you're never going to be as strong as Darth Vader. So that's clever, you know, like, I like that. But for her, it comes along a long line of her being able to do everything good. So then we have this moment where Rey's alone and she uses the Force to get out of her bonds. So she's, you know, she's there on that thing. And if you don't know this, the stormtrooper in this scene is none other than James Bond, Daniel Craig. And you can hear it's Craig when he comes over to her, the chair she's in, and he starts repeating some of the lines she's saying. You can hear it's Daniel Craig's accent. It's really funny. So it's a funny moment, especially when she says, and leave the gun, and he drops the gun. Like, there's some comedy there. But, like, this is it. Like, all right, so now I'm going to go into my little diatribe about Rey. Here's the thing about Rey. I have to say to myself, like, Rey is kind of the Luke Skywalker in this film. And that's the way I look at it. Like, Rey is the Luke character, right? Think about Star Wars and think about Luke, right? First of all, the one thing Luke can do is pilot. And we know he can pilot because in the beginning of the film, he wants to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters. Why? So he can put him in his T-16 Skyhopper and fly. Like, he's a hotshot desert pilot. You know, that's his thing. That's his only thing that Luke does, right? So when he flies at the end of the film at the Death Star, I totally believe it, that he's a hotshot pilot. Okay, great. His first encounter with the Sand People, he gets his ass kicked and he gets knocked out cold, right? Rey's first encounter with, you know, a similar group of people on Jakku, she beats the crap out of both of them with her staff, right? They get to the cantina with Ben. And first of all, he can't get off the planet without Ben. You know, like, he kind of needs Ben to get off the planet, and him and Ben need another figure to help them as well because they can't afford a vehicle, you know, and it's not easy. They can't just steal one. So when Luke goes into the cantina, he almost gets clock cleaned by that guy at the bar, you know, that guy who's like, I have the death sentence on 12 systems. And Ben has to save him from that, right? When Rey's on the run, you know, they make a great point of her saying, I don't need saving, don't take my hand, right? So she doesn't need anybody in that way. And that bothers me because I think, to me, as a 48-year-old guy, characters who have flaws and who aren't all powerful are more interesting to me. Like, you know, okay, there's only rare occasions like Conan the Barbarian or like Jack Reacher, you know, these characters who are like constantly totally kicking ass. Every once in a while, you can follow some characters like that, but it's a lark, you know. Having a character be great at everything, I don't go inside. Like, I don't get in to find out who they are. Like, you know, Luke can't do all these things. And so, you know, they get to the Death Star. He has this moment where he comes up with the plan to rescue Leia, but it all goes to shit. She has to save them, you know? So, like, and he almost gets drowned in the trash compactor, right? He has to get saved when the things go together. He does save them by, you know, calling to 3PO, right? He's got the comm link to 3PO. So, and all these things. And at the very end of the film, when Luke's about to deliver the coup de grace to the Death Star, he's about to get blown up by Vader, and he's saved by Han. So, in a way, and this is, I think this is so genius, because this is Luke's character. His overriding strength is that he's just such a good, spiritually good character, and that at the end of Empire Strikes Back, he decides to die rather than go with Vader. So, like, he's so spiritually pure, Luke. He's like, you're my father, the world has gone to shit, but I will die rather than turn to the dark side. And he does. And then later on, when he probably couldn't face Vader, he's saved by his friends. So this, like, it just creates a whole bunch of great stuff to happen in a story. At the end of Jedi, like, he destroys, yeah, he does beat Vader in a saber fight, definitely, but he only destroys the Emperor by sacrificing himself, which brings the good piece out of Vader. So, you know, Luke doesn't beat the Emperor physically or master or dominate him. He wins by having this purity of spirit, which I think is it's a beautiful story, whether Lucas meant it to happen or whether he lucked into it. You know, Luke's never his dominant force, and Rey can do everything. The fact that she can fly, to me, is bogus. She's a scavenger. She's living hand to mouth. Where does she have the time to, like, you know, to be able to fly in ships, right? She can fight. She can kick ass because she has to defend herself. That kind of goes with her loner status, so I get it. She gets on the Millennium Falcon. She knows everything. And yes, she's a scavenger, so she knows the inside of ships. But like, the story makes a real play of her like solving all these problems over and over and over again without anyone's help. Like, she wins all the time, in a sense. And after a while, it started to annoy me. And especially when she gets force powers, you know, it took Luke serious training to be able to do some stuff. And here she is after, like, you know, a brief chat with Maz Kanata, and she's using like the Jedi mind trick, which Luke didn't figure out for a long time. And so and when they come to rescue her, right, she doesn't need a rescuing. She's already climbing around in the bay looking for a ship to escape. So to me, Rey is like on her own the whole time. Like, she doesn't need any saving. There's no real goal for her. You know, where Luke was like, his parents got killed. So he was like, you know, I want to become a Jedi like my father. There was this whole story about him and his dad, and now he's going to, you know, follow in his father's footsteps because his family were killed, and he's going to fight the evil empire. And you know, Vader was the killer of his father, which was, you know, his direct enemy. So there was this wonderful thing. Whereas Rey is like, she's great at everything, and at the same time, there's nowhere for her to go. There's no real story for her. Like, she winds up beating Kylo Ren at the end, but like, you know, it just kind of happens that she's there because she got kidnapped. You know, like, it wasn't. Anyway, so my thing about Rey is exactly that. It's like, there's no in for her. You know, the one moment when she's vulnerable, where she's crying about her family for 2 seconds and she runs into the woods, like, it's not enough, you know? Like, and again, if I was a 13-year-old boy or girl, maybe I would think Rey is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Maybe that's to have a character who just kicks butt all the time. And JJ is a real big feminist. I mean, if you look at Alias and Fringe, like, he's, and Felicity, like, he's all about girl power, man. And, you know, he's one of the first, right? So his female characters are just like, they don't need any help. They know, they're always right, pretty much. They're very rounded. They're very self, you know, possessed, which, hey, if this is a writing of the landscape and a balancing of things, then I'm all for it in that way. But at the same time, I either like a character or I don't like a character. And I love Daisy Ridley. So I hope they give her a little more interesting things to do in the second film. But again, in this one, she's, you know, flawless. You know, she can do pretty much everything, doesn't need much from anybody, doesn't really need anything. And for characters who don't need other characters, it just creates like this lone wolf thing where it's like, well, okay, well, you know, so there's no cohesion around her. Like, Luke, in a sense, galvanizes all these people around him to do stuff. You know, Han and even Leia at times, and Ben. You know, like, he's there and they're all around him, and they're kind of a team and they're doing things together. Whereas Rey, it's just like, it's the Rey show most of the time. So anyway, that's my rant. I know this has been very polarized on the web, but I just wanted to give my take on it. So after this, we have Kylo Ren doing another saber freakout, which, like, I don't like. And this one is even more funny because there are two stormtroopers walking towards him as he's doing it. And then when they back away, it's obviously a comedic beat. So I was not a big fan of that. But I did love the Starkiller base draining the sun. That's a really crazy thing. And the weapon, actually, I didn't really talk about Starkiller Base's weapon. I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, this is a thing that can take out several planets at the same time. I mean, it's cool. I mean, I really liked the scene where, you know, that one big planet that you're on is about to be destroyed, and it's a civilized planet, so there's probably billions on it. Like, it was a pretty intense scene, and the people on that planet watching as the other planets in their system are blown away. But it's another big, you know, it's the third one, man. Like, I'm personally tired of these kind of, you know, big super weapon kind of things. So then we get, you know, the big plan. They're all sitting around, and this is again a callback to Episode 4, right? And this is the thing where, like, JJ, I think, is definitely winking at the audience very deliberately. I feel like JJ and the writers are speaking through Han, where he's like, it's another big gun. There's got to be a vulnerable spot, kid. Bring it, kid. What do you got? You know, like, and there's something just so cavalier about it I think what JJ wants to do is like, hey, come on, it's Star Wars. There's another big weapon. We're going to blow it up. Yeah, let's go. And laugh along the way. And I was so out of it. I just felt like it was just really stupid. At this point in the movie, I thought, wow, I so don't give a shit about another super weapon being blown up. I mean, are you kidding me? This is taking the franchise in a new direction and taking it forward. Like, I just felt like it was such a regression. I didn't like it. And even though I laughed at the jokes
again, I felt like the jokes of the big gun were done at the expense of the movie having legs, which I don't think it has. Then we have Han and Leia's last moment where she's like, you know, I always hated watching you leave. That's why I did it. So you'd miss me. It's just, it falls flat. Again, no chemistry between them in my mind at all. And they don't kiss. Like, you know, Leia puts her head on his chest. It's very weird, you know, because Harrison Ford is like, he's had facial work done. So he looks younger than she does, only because he's had work done and she hasn't. But they kind of make it where she's like the old auntie. That's weird. And that one moment when they hug, it's just kind of odd. You know, they do this thing now with the Falcon, and they did it earlier in the movie where, like, it escapes Han's big ship by going to light speed from inside the ship. And this is another version of that where the shielding on Starkiller Base prevents anything at light speed from getting in, anything below light speed from getting in. But if you're at light speed, you can get past it. So they come out of hyperspace in the planet. I think they were playing fast and loose with that. I think that it was more of like an easy way to do stuff. Then, you know, it used to be a big deal, like going into hyperspace without doing precise calculations. And the fact that you would come out like in an atmosphere of a planet was like kind of unheard of in the original trilogy. So I don't know. It's at this point, you know, it's really veering into fantasy where I feel like JJ just wants to get shit done, you know. You know, they're all now on Starkiller Base. There's some callbacks to the original series. They have a shot where these four troopers are walking and they're saying, we think they may be splitting up. And that comes directly from the Death Star scene in episode 4, which I thought was funny. You know, it's great. Kylo Ren senses Solo and the Falcon and he says it on screen, so we know he knows he's there. They find Rey, who of course has already escaped, and he's basically, you know, they kind of interrupted her finding a ship and getting out of there, which she probably would have done in short order. Then we have, they get Captain Phasma to lower the shields, and then we have the main attack. So, you know, we have the big, rather than the three-prong ending as Lucas likes to do, it's a two-pronger. We've got the group inside and the attack outside. You know, the attack on the Starkiller base, like, you know, Poe is leading it, but all of the space attacks since the first movie, to me, have always been not as interesting, especially in Jedi, because our main characters weren't in it. The one space battle that I liked that worked was when in episode 3, don't kill me please, you had Anakin and Obi-Wan trying to get to Grievous' ship. So they had a purpose and you were with them the whole time, and it was really cool because like the battle mattered. Like you were in that battle because it was only those two, and you know, you wanted them to get to where they wanted to go. But here you're just with Poe, and you know, there's a couple of characters from like the original trilogy that make it here. I forget their names at the moment, but I don't know. It's not as important as what's going to go on inside. It's just, and so to me, the stakes they don't feel that high here, you know. Whereas when Luke was on his last run for the Death Star, man, it was like, even now when I watch it, I'm still like white knuckling it, you know. Like it matters because you're not cutting away to like other crap. Like George learned this thing where he's like, you know, you end a movie by doing three things. You have three different parts of an ending so you can continue to cross cut back and forth, and neither thing has to hold the movie, you know. It's, you sacrifice emotional direction really when you're not in that last moment. And really, you know, the story here is really inside the Starkiller base. So and then we have this moment that I think was right to do. I think it works in terms of Kylo Ren's character. I think you need to get Han out of this bloody movie because I'm not happy at how much he's kind of taking over from the other two characters. And I like the whole scene, you know. Again, I think Harrison Ford's flat, as he's flat in almost every other scene in this movie. Like he's just, his dialogue is not good and his delivery is not good. But Driver's great. And JJ really drags it out. And only when the sun finally goes cold, you know, when the sun finally is drained completely, does he kill Han. You know, Leia feels it. And it's a hell of a moment for the Star Wars universe. I don't think it works. I don't think what they did afterwards paid any kind of homage to it. I think it's kind of, they did it and they just kind of moved on. And I don't think they gave it the gravitas that it really deserves. Because, I mean, this is like one of the most beloved characters in the Star Wars universe. But I'll get to that. So Chewie wounds Kylo Ren pretty badly, and we've up to now seen the bowcaster twice in action as being an extremely powerful weapon. Ren takes it in the side, so you know he's got a pretty nasty wound going, which, you know, is the arguability factor in what happens next, which is the duel between him and Finn and Rey. So, you know, there's this, I've seen this a couple of different times. The first time I saw the movie, I thought it was such bullshit that Ren didn't kind of wipe the floor with both of them, you know. I've seen it several times now, and I see that all of the things are in place in order to equalize the thing. That he has this terrible wound, that he's not trying to kill Rey because he wants to turn her, so he's not fighting at full capacity. I think what bothers me more, and I think this plays into it,
Having Finn fight with the saber, like Finn pretty much gets his clock clean, which now he's a trained stormtrooper. So, you know, a bladed weapon or some kind of weapon hand to hand was taught. So it makes sense that he would hold his own a little bit against Ren, but hardly at all, which exactly what happens. That he gets off a shot on Ren's shoulder. I don't know. I don't think someone like him could ever get a shot off on Ren. But Ren wounded, so it's possible he's not at the top of his game. So it's arguable. I just don't feel it. But he pretty much disposes of Finn pretty quickly. And then we have, you know, the battle with Rey, where she, you know, she pulls the lightsaber out and they're fighting. And, you know, there's this moment where she's standing. She's just, you know, a staff fighter, right? So again, she has some facility with a weapon of this kind. And she's kind of, you know, so she's able to block him, which is pretty much all she does is kind of block him until that moment when she closes her eyes and feels the force, right? At which point she knocks him back and is able to, you know, eventually overcome him and knock him down and be triumphant. And I think what it comes down to is that, you know, think about the Star Wars, A New Hope, like, has anyone ever questioned Luke's ability to have made that final shot that destroyed the Death Star, right? I think in my life, I don't think I've ever met anyone in my life that's been like, yeah, man, I loved Star Wars, except bullshit that Luke's, like, making that shot at the end. Like, there was no doubt in my mind, you know, that he was a hotshot pilot from the backwater, right? He's talking about bullseyeing Womp Rats in his T-16 with Wedge before the battle. The Force is just a sharpening and directing of what is his natural ability as a pilot that he's honed for years. So when Luke does what he does at the end, like, there's no doubt in my mind. I have no doubt in my mind at all. But when Rey beats Ren, I just have doubts. There's just something wrong with it. And you know, there's a couple of guys, like, after they saw it, I actually severed some online relationships because one guy was going on and on how he was a staff fighter and Rey was fighting with a blade the way staff fighters would fight if they fought with a blade. And anyone who thinks that she couldn't have been, you know, beaten Ren is like a, you know, anti-feminist and an asshole. And like, he went off like crazy. And I just was like, kind of shut down, you know, sever myself, right? But it doesn't matter to me. Like, I don't buy it. I emotionally don't buy it. You know, like, I just, there's something wrong with these two kids beating the guy in the beginning of the movie who stopped a bloody blaster bolt with his mind, you know, like, so I feel like there's an unevenness in Ren's powers. He comes off as extremely powerful when JJ wants him to be, but when JJ wants the plot to go a certain way, a blaster bolt from Chewie kind of takes him down a peg to the point when he can just get, you know, beat up by these two characters, and there's just something wrong with it. I can't shake it, but there's just something wrong with the ending where when it's over, I feel like in my gut that, like, something wasn't right here. And I don't know if I even have it all worked out. Like, I'm trying to talk about it from 10 different directions. But all I do know is that I've seen the movie 3 times and it's wrong in my gut and it will always be. Like, I don't buy it at all. So, and again, at the end of a long movie of her winning at everything and doing everything right, I was just tired of her, frankly. So, then you have the last moment with Snoke, you know, we're leading into the plot of the next movie, bring me Kylo Ren, I'm going to complete his training. His completing his training, in a sense, was killing his father, you know, whereas Luke had to face Vader to complete his training, Ren had to kind of face his father and kill that last good part of himself by murdering his father in, like, cold blood, which he did, you know. So, very curious. I think I'm interested the most in what's going to happen to Kylo Ren and Finn than Rey. Like, you know, Rey will just learn how to be a better Jedi and she'll just go kick more ass. Like, what's going to happen to Rey? Will she ever have any flaws? But for Finn and Kylo Ren, I think I'll be interested in their development going forward. And another thing that really bothered me here is that the only... they give Han's death 3 scenes. There's a scene where Rey is standing there and looking at Leia and they hug. There's a brief shot of Chewie and moaning, like a real mournful Chewie sound that he does, which is really a heartbreaker. That one little shot of Chewie is really killer. And then later when I think Rey or someone comes to get Leia, she's just looking despondent. And that's it. Then you're on to the continual story. Then it's the whole triumphalism of the map. And Han's disappeared. He's gone, like, from memory. Now we're in, like, an exciting treasure hunt mode. And they find the map, and we're going to find Luke. And Rey's off to find Luke. And now Rey's piloting the Falcon, and Chewie's in the co-pilot seat, which really bugged me. And it's like, okay, Han's dead, but aren't we excited to go see Luke? And I just hated that. I hated it. I mean, especially Chewie, man, like, in a sense, I feel like Chewie was completely just thrust aside in this film. Like Rey is sitting in Han Solo's seat. You know, is it going to be Rey and Chewie in the next movie? And I don't know if I'll enjoy that, you know. But I think overall, I'm not sure I can articulate it completely, but I felt that Han's death was not given enough gravitas, that it didn't color the movie the way it should have. Like, this is an awful thing that he was killed by his own son. And you don't hear any talk about it. You just see Leia's pained, see Leia and Chewie in pained expressions. It's almost like, you know, Rey's the one who suffered the most as she gets the hug, like she was his, you know, like he was her father or something. Like, it just didn't, I don't know, tonally something was wrong and it bugged me because Han's death's a big deal, man. So, you know, then obviously we have the ending. She goes to find Luke. People were laughing in the theater when the movie ended and Hamill hadn't said anything. It's kind of funny that he had no dialogue in this. But I see why they wanted to end it that way. But I would have loved to have ended it on a darker note. Like, we're going to set out to find Luke now. But Han's death is like a huge deal. And we're ending it on an upswing of like, oh my God, Luke and Rey, and she's going to be trained and who's going to be what. Like, tonally there, like, it just, like, I don't know. I wasn't a fan. And we were out. So some other things that I was thinking about as I've been watching the film a couple of times to get ready to podcast it is there were no new ships. You know, like one thing Lucas always did is that every Star Wars movie had new ships in it. You know, there were new TIE fighters. There were new, you know, a new alphabet letter fighter in the Rebellion, A-Wing, B-Wing, Y-Wing, you know, X-Wing. Here we're just getting, you know, the only new thing was the stupid weapon, but and that's like a Death Star. But we just had regular X-Wings and TIE fighters and a Star Destroyer, you know, like there was no new ships. And I kind of missed that. I missed Lucas, you know, throwing some new ships at me. So I was kind of bummed. I feel like the film also lacked Lucas's stately direction. Like, you know, George frames shots. George lingers on ships landing and taking off. And, he, you know, because he's kind of a sci-fi geek in a way. And he takes his time and he kind of geeks out over these things. But that's not JJ. I mean, JJ is like, you know, a light on his feet storyteller. So there was a difference there that I didn't like. I don't really like JJ's touch so much in this universe. What I thought he was going to be great at, which was the characters, he was great at, but only for like Finn and Rey. And you heard me talking about Rey. So, you know, I didn't think he really nailed it with the original characters, which, you know, was kind of a bummer. I felt like the whole story was underwritten. I felt like they deliberately told us so little about everything. Like, George told us so much more about... George told us stories about the dark side, about Luke's father, about what happened, about the Empire. We heard stories about stuff, and we heard information. But JJ is such like a mystery box guy. He's like years of writing soap opera TV. He wants to just tease you with stuff to get you to the next place, and he never sits and lingers, because that's what's important to him. Which leads me to the next problem with it is spiritually, this movie was very light, and it's the one thing that I thought was going to be the case. You know, like Empire and Star Wars and even the end of Jedi, man, they're deep movies. You know, the stuff with the Force is really great, really powerful. And in my podcast, I talk about how ingenious Luke's journey is, especially at the end of Jedi. But spiritually, this movie is like very light. There's no real, you're not getting any real notion of the Force. Like Rey uses the Force to beat Kylo Ren, you know, and there's no notion of it being anything else. Yeah, spiritually, it was very light for me. One thing I think it did really well was funny. It was funny all the way through. I mean, and I think, unfortunately, it was at the expense of giving the movie any depth. Like, George was able to do both the first Star Wars, which is a miracle. But this movie was very funny. I mean, it's consistently funny. Han was funny. Finn was funny. You know, there was really great comedic moments, even with Chewie, a couple with BB-8. So you were laughing through the whole movie, which was amazing, you know. So I got to give JJ credit there. I mean, and the writers, it was really funny, and that is a key component to Star Wars. Like Star Wars it's not a super dark universe all the time. Like there's always humor in it. It's always, you know, its characters are always kind of having a good time in a certain way, you know. So that was really cool that was still there. There's probably 1,000 bits of trivia and 1,000 Easter eggs and stuff, and I could go on for like another half hour with just that. So I'm gonna beg off. You can go to, you know, IMDb or Wikipedia and find out, like, everybody was in this movie. You know, 1,000 people did cameos. There's all kinds of Easter eggs all over the place. But since I'm clocking in at about an hour plus now, I don't want to go on and do all the trivia, which most people probably know anyway. So I'm going to let that go. But anyway, that's my take on Star Wars The Force Awakens, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks once again for listening to Sci-Fi on Screen, to my returning listeners and new listeners alike. If you like what you heard, head on over to iTunes and give us a review. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions about the show, you can send an email to scifionscreen@gmail.com.
or feel free to leave a comment on the website, www.scifionscreen.com, and you can leave a comment in the comments section of the show page. If you'd like to support scifionscreen.com, you can go to patreon.com/scifionscreen, and that's Patreon is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And to make it easy on yourself, there is a button on the webpage that you can click. Patreon is set up so you can pick an amount you want to contribute per episode, and it'll be recurring. If you'd like to do that, that is available. We'd appreciate all the support we can get. And you can find us, again, our website, www.scifionscreen.com. We have a Facebook page, and on any smartphone, you could search for us on the podcast app and subscribe. Thanks again. See you next time.